Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3. I'm Howie Lim. Now, with the awarding of Singapore's first four digital banking licenses last year, there'll be a big transformation in the way consumers access financial services once they're rolled out in 2022. For these upcoming digital banks to compete with the established incumbents, building customer trust needs to be a key priority. However, as fully digital businesses, will these new entrants be exposed to significantly greater risks, or will they be better prepared than their brick-and-mortar counterparts? What are some of the cybersecurity challenges digital banks face, and how best can they be mitigated? For more insight, we speak to Sean Duca, who's Vice President, Regional Chief Security Officer, Asia-Pacific and Japan at Palo Alto Networks. Sean, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
So if we do that side-by-side comparison, how much more vulnerable are digital banks to cyber attacks compared to traditional banks?
Look, I think as a whole, it's probably hard to really sort of quantify, who's better off, worse off type of thing. I think as a whole, you pretty much need to look at it from the fact that financial institutions will always be an attractive target for cyber criminals due to the breadth and nature of the information they store about their customers. You know, being a wholly digital bank, there's going to be a lot more focus around using sort of the online capabilities that are actually there, obviously. But with that, digital banks being fully online, it's crucial that they need to sort of bear in mind that there's no flawless software systems or applications. So when these flaws result into some sort of security vulnerability, threat actors are likely to always try and exploit them, try and compromise those systems, the applications, and by extension, the endpoints that they actually sort of reside on themselves, being what we actually sort of use to try and interact with the banks, so our phones and tablets and devices.
Would it be fair then to ask how much of a rise we'll see in the number of attacks with the adoption of digital technologies by many financial institutions? Let's not talk about the completely digital banks.
I think over the years, we've been seeing more and more attacks targeting customers because, you know, to use the sort of a famous quote from Willie Sutton, the famous bank robber in the US, you know, why did you actually rob banks? It's because that's where the money is. And I think we keep on seeing more and more people really sort of try to work out a way of how do they actually get access to, you know, money for number one, or ultimately how do they actually get access to the information, so the identity information about us. Now, if I think about some of the statistics, you know, total number of banking-related phishing scams increased by more than 2,500% in the first half of 2020, and that's to 898 cases, and that's according to the Singapore Police Force. So we're definitely seeing this rise, and that's just one type of attack, or, you know, phishing and credential-based attacks. But when we start to look at some of the other threats that we're seeing out there, you know, ransomware has definitely taken up a fair bit of the airwaves over the last year, at least, especially during sort of in the COVID period, because we're seeing people are trying to work out how do they get access to our information. If they can put a bit of a padlock on that, drop a ransom note and say, please pay me money, and then you can actually get your information back. We've seen people actually pay, and that's when it becomes problematic, where there's something there of value, and obviously money is definitely the key thing.
What are some of the other common banking threats that we've seen, trends rather?
So some of the other trends that we've actually seen are people that have got, obviously, their banking with, you know, a provider, whether it be sort of a digital bank or not, they could actually be receiving emails that could be related to what's called business email compromise emails. So it looks like it's a legitimate email, probably from a supplier saying, please pay this invoice, and you effectively transfer some money to what you believe is the actual supplier. But lo and behold, a cyber criminal has actually changed maybe the bank account details of your supplier on the actual invoice itself, and you're actually paying money to an unknown, unauthorized third party who you thought was your supplier, but the money's now actually going to someone else's hands. You know, again, that's a very popular type of attack that's targeting, you know, many, many businesses that are obviously sort of banking online as well.
That type's not even, say, exclusive to the banking and entities that have money. I got an email, or we were warned that we might get emails from, say, our chief editor or something, but look at the email address, it won't be actually from them.
Yeah.
So we have to talk about security, obviously. How then can we better be prepared? I mean, being aware of them obviously would help.
I think the key thing with an end user is always being on guard. And I always kind of say it's analogous to, you know, when we jump into a Grab in Singapore, you know, it's ingrained in us that we're going to put our seatbelt on. If we're jumping into our own car, it's ingrained in us that we put our seatbelt on. We always think every single time. And I think that same notion needs to be applied to any time that we're actually online, any time that we're on one of our devices that are actually connected online. We should always be thinking about, should I really be handing off this information right now? If I open up this email, should I be clicking on that particular link because I don't really know who the person's from? So there's a lot of those, let's just call it the cyber hygiene pieces that I think we really need to continue to ensure that we sort of bed down. And it just becomes ingrained in us that we're going to think before we click. And that same notion needs to always be applied in any type of sort of medium that we're using when using technology, really.
Talk to us as to why you'd like to bring up application programming interfaces security. There's widespread use of them now, and that puts them under greater risk, or the fact that security is not strong enough?
So an API is effectively a set of programming codes that enables data to be transmitted between one software product or a component to another. And with open APIs, you're effectively allowing this world where all this information becomes public. And this is where we're starting to see a lot of these digital banks sort of leveraging a lot of these open APIs. So people can start to collect this information, turn it into, you know, some amazing services or capability that they can actually offer to their own customers. Now, some of the key things around sort of APIs or the fundamental components of it is the fact that they're actually relying on a lot of this cloud computing technology. And there is always, sometimes can be seen as a bit of a misnomer as well, where people believe, well, if I'm hosting it in public cloud, then it's secure because, you know, the big cloud providers, of course, they're going to be securing, you know, everything that's there. Well, they're really focusing on actually trying to secure their own infrastructure. But what you put into the cloud, you need to be thinking about securing that yourself. So for any banks or any organization that's leveraging these types of capabilities of, you know, public cloud infrastructure, they really need to think about how do they, one, gain visibility into what's protected and unprotected from those APIs. And that could be across the entire sprawl of infrastructure they've actually sort of built out there. So again, we're just going to think about someone's actually written a piece of code. It was written by a human. Sometimes we can actually make a mistake. So let's ensure that we're always double checking and, you know, using technology to really try and work out, is there anything that could be an exposure point that someone could try and exploit?
We're speaking with Sean Duca, who is Vice President, Regional Chief Security Officer for Asia Pacific and Japan at Palo Alto Networks. Sean, talk to us about SolarWinds, that recent incident, and why it was such a big deal, how it's affected consumer trust. I mean, was it because it was something as commonplace, dare I say, as Trojanizing someone else, or just because of the magnitude of it?
I think it's probably a case of a bit of both, actually. So supply chain attacks, yeah, they have been around for a while. And I think what we're seeing over the years is they're actually getting more and more targeted, more sophisticated every single time. And with the SolarWinds incident, what it really exposed was infrastructure weaknesses in organizations, which really serve as that bit of a wake-up call in terms of what sort of cybersecurity is really meant to be doing right now for their own organization. And security has to be more proactive. It needs to be obviously future-proof. If organizations are not able to prevent an attack in real time, they need to have the capabilities in order to detect and also investigate near real time using the good information and the intelligence they've actually got. So what we're seeing is people are trying to work out, how do I get into an organization, leverage them as, let's just call it a bit of a piggyback to get into another way of getting inside an organization. So
like you've put colonizing the systems?
Well, it's kind of in a way where I've given my trust already to an organization because they're a supplier, they're a vendor, you know, and you think of that in the notion of a bank. You know, we've given trust. And yeah, when a cyber attacker breaks that trust, because they're effectively saying, let me try and get my malicious software inside the person or the organization that we actually trust. And that's where obviously we can start to see that erosion in the trust there. And obviously erosion in the systems that we actually see is obviously going to be a massive issue. We need to ensure that we can stop that. So I think time and time again, we're just going to see that these type of attacks will definitely increase. Consumer trust hopefully doesn't get eroded, but we need to make sure that we're just constantly on, you know, eyes on the screen to try and work out how do we stop the next attack that could be around the corner.
Where are you personally, Sean, in all of this feeling? How are you feeling in all of this? Because cybersecurity, not the most glamorous thing to talk about. People tend to glaze over, but it's so important and it's feeling so dire. Like people aren't listening. Yeah, my colleagues don't listen. They don't change the passwords from the 1, 2, 3, 4. Our IT guys are constantly on our cases about it.
Yeah. Look, I think the big thing is it's constantly going to be serving as a bit of a wake-up call. And I think when we start to see more people and more organizations impacted, and, you know, if regulations were to come out and start to really sort of put a bit of a heavy hand on an organization and maybe there's some sort of financial penalty around it, I think it's going to see people start to change their behavior. You know, I look around the world and, you know, in Australia where I am, you know, we could actually have a bank cover some of the losses if there was some sort of fraudulent activity, but they're not obliged to, and they don't do that every single time either. Really depends on the situation. So I think what we're going to start to see is if people are, you know, not changing their passwords, if they're doing all these different things that we've always been encouraging, at some point in time, that will eventually catch up. That's what I personally feel.
But it's disappointing, isn't it, to see that human being such? Yeah. It's got to be on pain of death when it affects you in some real material way, then you'll do it. Okay, so let's talk about then the recently updated cybersecurity guidelines from the Monetary Authority of Singapore. Sufficient to protect these digital banks that are upcoming, you think?
Look, I think it definitely is. It's a good step in definitely the right direction. And I think what the Monetary Authority has really been focusing on is how do we just keep on up-leveling what people should be doing? And I think it's critical for organizations to really understand the whole complete view of their own organization, have that accurate, up-to-the-minute baseline, if you really want to sort of call it that, of what's really happening right here. And cybersecurity for me is really around it's managing risk. And every bank, every organization, any organization for that matter, has a risk appetite. And I think they need to be able to pull the levers, but they need to be able to know what type of risk could we actually take on board? Could we accept it? Could we mitigate it? Could we avoid it? Or do we actually sort of look at some other means of like transferring if there is a way to sort of transfer part of that risk? I think every organization has to go through that. So I think it's definitely a good step in the right direction. But again, we need to really understand what's going on there. So full visibility and having that granular ability to look at what's really happening is fundamental.
It feels as though those digital banks that start to roll out in 2022 might have a great opportunity to sort of start everything from scratch. So what are some of the safeguards they should put in, must-haves versus going into the nice-to-haves and a complete ecosystem that's robust?
Yeah, look, I think you've sort of hit the nail on the head. I think because they can actually start from net new, it gives them the ability they can say, let's not simply look at this is the way that we've always done security, so to speak. Let's just keep on sort of applying that same model. I think it gives them the opportunity that they can really start to say, how do we move that bar or raise the bar higher and think about different ways? So when we're writing our code, our applications, we're actually applying some logic to not just simply say, you know, developers, please ensure that you're actually making, you're not doing any sort of mistakes in your code. We can actually leverage technology the whole way through to see if there's any other type of, you know, vulnerabilities that potentially could have existed. If a developer is borrowing some code, again, we can actually check to see where did the code come from, what's actually being used, is there any other way that someone could actually try and exploit the code that's actually in there? And then the other part would really be around once the code is up and running, how do we actually provide protection in real time to that? How do we ensure that the data is actually sitting there and it's secure? We can provide full visibility around, you know, who's got access to what. If a user is connecting to their systems, you know, there's ways that we can try and sort of prevent that or ensure that we're actually using high levels of authentication. So think about that whole multi-factor, something you know, something you have, something you are. Yeah, that's really the crux of what we want to try and do with not just simply a password, which is something that you know. You know, how do we start to leverage, you know, the touch ID capabilities that could be on an iPhone or sort of the facial recognition? Starting to link all those things together really starts to raise the bar where it will make it fundamentally harder for a cyber attacker. But at the same time, we're also raising the bar to hopefully protect the bank even more.
I got to tell you, Sean, as a 90s fan, 80s kid growing up with these crazy 90s sci-fi films, I'm so afraid someone will steal my eyeball for retina scanning. Sean Duca is the Vice President, Regional Chief Security Officer, Asia Pacific and Japan, Palo Alto Networks. Sean, thank you so much for your time and stay safe, sir.
No worries. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.